Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Your posing is last call out. I know. We figure we're going to get on stage. We should at least practice posing. And that's why we have today Daniel Coffeen. He is now the official J3U posing education educator. What's your title you prefer, Daniel?
I like educator.
Yeah.
I don't like coach. I like educator.
Yeah, we got to lift Daniel up above posing coach. We've got more intellect coming out of that human than posing coach.
Yeah, we had every aspect in J3U of like covered with like nutrition and training and PDs and everything. It's like, where's the gap? It's like, oh yeah, you get on stage, you have to pose as well. And it's like, so many people miss the mark on posing, and just, you could have a great physique, be conditioned, have all the right pieces put together, but if you don't display them right, it can all go to crap and you can look way smaller than what you need to. So Daniel has extremely great knack at biomechanics and giving right cueing and putting people in proper positions to actually nail these poses. So we wanted him on and announce him as our new lead educator in posing and pick his brain on what we can do to improve our posing for getting on stage. And Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going well. Thank you guys for having me. Thanks for having me, Luke.
Yeah, of course.
I've always felt very close to the J3U family, but now I feel like I just got adopted. It feels good.
I guess the first thing, like when I got into bodybuilding, it's like I love training, and getting on stage led to having some type of outcome, right? So would you say posing always came like naturally to you?
No.
That's it, most of us, right?
No, not even a little bit. And it's funny too. I think the genesis of like how people become bodybuilders, I think those who see the stage and get excited by the stage, I think those people are actually in the minority. I think the majority of us are people that just love training. And at least for me, someone told me that I should compete in bodybuilding. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like, what is this about? And I didn't even really pay attention too much to the whole stage stuff until I was like 4 weeks out. And I was like, oh, wait, I have this great physique, right? Or like what I thought was great at that point in time. But I forgot that there was this whole performance that takes place on the show day. And so I neglected that. And so when I first started posing, did it come natural? No, like I was the guy who looked all stiff as a board and was white knuckling poses and trying to, you know, thinking that the harder I squeezed, the better I looked. And that just wasn't the case. Even like my first national show, I would say that my posing was like passable. I wouldn't say that it was even up average or above average at that. So it's something I've certainly had to work at. And it's something that I've had to refine over time, and I'm still learning.
And Dan, your background before bodybuilding, just so everyone knows, like high level military, Army Ranger, badass. So you feel like that militant type of how you go through things would carry into posing, and it wasn't as artistic or influent?
Yeah, like I don't know how much carryover there is from jumping out of planes to dancing on stage in your underwear, but I mean it could be close. But sequences and orders of operations have always made sense to me, and I think when it comes to posing, really when it comes to bodybuilding in general, probably until before J3U came around, a lot of this stuff was very subjective. There wasn't a whole lot of objective data that could be collected. And so, you know, your old school posing coaches would just kind of put you in positions and say like, this is it. This is what looks best for you. Like, well, that's a totally subjective thing for that person. Where what I liked is being able to have a sequence of events, order of operations to be able to build a pose and do it. Do I think that I learned that in the Army? Maybe, but I think it's really just more of like my bias of being like a left-brained person, very analytical, lists and steps make sense to me. And I know I'm not the only person like that. And so I think if we can like break things down into their component parts, we can make complex things more simple.
I do think there's a slight differentiation to make when we kind of start to talk about this, because and this is why I like the word posing educator for you, Daniel, rather than posing coach, is you get someone who can dance or can move and they put together a posing routine, and then all of a sudden it's like somewhat representative of dancing on stage relative to posing, and now they're a posing coach. And I think one of the things that I really resonate with kind of the way that you think about posing and why a lot of my clients do posing work with you, and even before you like had developed the following that you're at now, I like started sending people your way, is because you think about it more from a fundamentals and a mechanics standpoint, and like how that's actually going to present on stage, and kind of what that looks like, and kind of where do you think you started to get that thought process aligned to where that's how you express that? Because for me, if you're going to be teaching something, you have to be able to get someone through the fundamentals first. And I see these people always starting with things outside the fundamentals, and they can't even do the things that were actually judged on correctly. And I kind of wanted to hear where you kind of came to this thought process that led through a mechanics understanding into the fundamentals, because that's what kind of resonated with me when you would talk about posing.
Yeah, sure. So that's a great question, Luke. And what I like, the analogy that I give people, especially like a beginner, a new learner is what I call them, is like, we're trying to build a house here. Right. And if it's your first show, like, we're just trying to build a serviceable house. We're not trying to build a mansion. But regardless if you're building, you know, an apartment, a condo, or a mansion, you still have to have a foundation. And that foundation has to be firm. It has to hold the walls of what you're going to be building. And so that's where mechanics, specifically biomechanics, comes into play. And that background for me came from physical therapy school, which I'm still in currently. I was sitting in biomechanics class, kind of just learning how the body moves, what muscles do to joints, how joints can be positioned to elicit certain muscle actions. And as a person that just likes to apply whatever they're learning to their hobby, I just decided that I was going to apply the biomechanics and the anatomy and all this stuff that I was learning in school to bodybuilding. And you could do that with training, which is what you guys do, especially you, Luke. Like, you do a great job with talking about lines of pull and first, second, third class levers and stuff like that. But no one's doing that for posing. It exists, right? Like, joint positions matter. They tell a story of your physique. And if those positions, if those joints are out of position, then your story isn't very good. And so that's kind of where the genesis of biomechanics and anatomy and applying it to posing came from.
And so, like, through that, and that's why I connected well, because I thought for a lot of guys in posing, we think the same. We need like the logical step process and mechanics. Because even when I'm posing, I'm like, how do I get my glute to contract? It's like, well, what's its function? Mm. And it's like, oh, it externally rotates. I increase some force, and that gives the right cue to get in that pose, rather than something that's like up in the clouds, how you normally have been instructed to pose.
More subjectively.
Yeah. Right. You've also created like what I've seen, some like the 10 tenets of posing.
Yeah. The principles,
your principles, right? Which, are great. They're basic, but they're missed, right?
They're part of the foundation.
The foundation,
right? Like, if those 10 principles aren't embedded within the foundation, then when you're putting all the tile work in and doing all the aesthetics and the window trim and stuff, like, walls start falling over. Right. And then all of a sudden, you know, that's why you see professionals who still hit poses incorrect, because their genetics and their hard work has gotten them to a professional level. But then there's still foundational disruption that's taking place that's keeping them from progressing even further.
You mind going through your principles? Yeah. I think they're solid. It's the ones that we need to hit because people miss them on stage big time.
Sure. Well, the most important one, principle number one, is an understanding that objects appear larger the closer they are to the eye, and they appear smaller the further they are away. And if you can understand like just that one concept, that will change all of your front shots. All of them. Front lat spread, front relaxed, front double bicep, ab and thigh, most muscular. So there's five poses right there that are all wrapped up under that first principle. And what we're trying to accomplish with that principle is there's joints and there's body parts that we want closer to the eyes of the judges, i.e. delts, chest, arms, stuff like that. And then there's your waist, which we want to be as far away from the eyes of the judges as possible, because we want that thing to look as small as possible. So like, if you can just understand that, then there's five poses that you've already improved. Second one is what I call opposing vectors. Some people call it push-pull. And that's just understanding that when you're in a pose, like, it's not supposed to ever be comfortable. If you're comfortable in a pose, you're probably doing it wrong, right? And so, because we're trying to like get joints to maximum end range, right? So when you're doing that front relaxed and you're pushing those hips back and you're shoving that chest forward, guess what you're cranking down on? Lumbar spine. Like, that's not a good feeling. But you know that you're in the position well when you can feel that little bit of back pain, and you know that chest is going one way and pelvis and waist is going the other direction.
The relaxed poses aren't truly relaxed. It's a terrible name for them, right?
Yeah, part of them are relaxed, right? Like, upper body's a little kind of relaxed. Yeah, there's lower body is definitely getting after it. Yeah.
And then your third one from there.
Third one. You're gonna have to let me look at my notes.
Oh. Can you pull out your notes? I know, I was like, you want your 10 perfectly in order.
Yeah. I would like to say that I have them all memorized, but that's kind of a pipe dream right at this point. But
I've seen that for the your principle number two, like people not cranking, like their quarter turns twist hard enough over to where they're not showing like that taper as fully as they could, right? It's like you got to twist extremely hard throughout this.
Yeah, and you'll hear them like, well, I can't. Well, it's like, well, we got to fix it then.
Yeah.
You know, because like we can't have you only rotating, you know, like we can't have you rotating insufficiently, because then it's going to destroy the whole pose. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's like another aspect. The posing coach almost has to have a aspect around corrective exercise to get into those positions. That it's kind of lax. It's just like, well, just keep forcing. It's like, no, it's probably an issue that needs to get addressed, or balances, right? We all have a quarter turn where you can't fully twist into it.
Yep.
Versus the other side. But what does that mean for your training?
Right. And imbalances and stuff like that, especially within posing, it comes down to two things. You either have a mobility issue, like there's just tightness or something like that you can work out over time, or there's a motor control issue, which is like hitting the glute or something like that. Or if you just don't have the capability to have your brain tell your muscle to do something, that's another aspect of that has to be learned over time. And how do we do that? We do that with corrective exercise, isolation exercises, to be able to create that mind-muscle connection to be able to do that.
No, that's perfect. I think that's where like the PT side of you starts to shine, to be able to pick up on those things where a lot of the other... If you weren't posing through a mechanical sense, you might miss it.
Sure. Yeah. And not having an understanding of what each muscle does, like what its action is. And that's like probably one of the biggest mistakes I see with people is not posing the action of a muscle. Right. So like the most easiest example is the bicep, right? So the action of the bicep, most people think it's like elbow flexion, which that is an action, but its primary action is wrist and forearm supination, right? Like holding a bowl of soup. And so how do we pose that action? Well, if you think about a front double bicep, when you curl your wrist up, right, you need to be fully supinated. We talked about this in the gym. I think that's kind of where the genesis of that came, is you have to be fully supinated, meaning fingers need to be facing your ears. But how many guys on Bodybuilders Without Borders do you see with wedding rings right? Like both hands with their knuckles pointed at the camera. And it's just like, oh man, you got to the 1 yard line and you fumbled. Everything else looks great. And all you need to do is just turn those fingers toward your ears. But they don't understand what the action of that muscle is, or their coach doesn't. And it's kind of selling them short.
And it's a lot of times too, I'll see the weak body part that also lacks the functional display in their posing. Mm. Like they have weak arms and they just don't fully supinate, or they lack some ability to get there.
Sure.
And they also lack just bicep development in general.
So a weak body
part. Because they probably do on their curls like that.
Right. So a weak body part becomes a weaker body part.
Double whammy.
Because they can't double, yeah. So the third principle is kind of talking about motor control stuff, is the pelvis is the linchpin, meaning like everything in posing, you know, most people say it starts from the ground, and it does when you get into a pose, but the most important aspect of a pose is where the pelvis is positioned, right? And we talked about it a little bit in principle one about having it backwards or having it pushed backward. But think about like a side relaxed, right? If you have an anterior pelvic tilt, and your side relaxed, well, that's going to make it nearly impossible to activate that glute, because you have now lengthened the glute fibers, right? Instead of shortened them. Whereas you want that posterior pelvic tilt in the side relaxed, so that you can have those nice, you know, glute lines.
And it's going to limit rotation, right? That anterior pelvic tilt and that inability to disassociate pelvis rib cage. Yep. Is also going to kind of lead to them not being able to turn into one side well.
Right. And so that can be a mobility issue, right? Like if you are in an anterior pelvic tilt all the time, that's just kind of your baseline. That's going to, might be a difficult shot for you to hit. Could also be a motor control issue, right? Like if you just lack the awareness of how to tilt your pelvis, then that could be an issue as well.
Do you usually teach posing from, like a lot of people say, teach it from the ground up, or is it from the hip out? How do you set it up?
Can you give me an example of a pose?
Let's start with the front relaxed.
Front, right? Relaxed.
Like do you start with foot width and position, and then that gets into knee bend and then hip? Or is it like the hip's a linchpin, so that's most important and you work out? How do you?
So it's steps. Like I talked about earlier, sequence. Every pose has a sequence. And so for a front shot, the sequence is exactly the same. So you put your feet at a 45 degree angle, you shift your body weight to your pinky toe sides of your feet and try to over exaggerate your arches, right? That's going to put you in a really good foot position to be able to do the next cue, which is to rip the floor apart. And what that's doing is that's eliciting hip external rotation through a closed chain movement, because both your feet are on the floor. And then that third step is going to be the position of the pelvis. Why I say that the pelvis is the linchpin is because it's the thing that can make or break a pose, right? If in that front relax or that front double bicep, if your pelvis isn't going backwards and it's going forwards, like welcome to having a super wide waist on stage, right? Like just that one movement and that one, you know, couple inches of movement can turn a really good pose into not a flattering pose at all.
Well, it also changes how everything looks from up to down, right? So like you might lengthen out the quads, pushing the hips forward. One, that they could thin out your quad, also make it harder to contract them. Or if they're too anteriorly tilted, you lengthen out the abs, makes you look kind of pregnant on stage, but also fully lengthened, you're not able to contract them. So you lose detail.
Yep.
So spreading out from the hip, you could lose detail if they're not positioned right.
Correct.
But in a sequencing and cueing, you still cue from the ground up.
Still cue. Yeah. Cue from the ground up. That's just where you're strongest. That's, you know, where you're creating force from. So you have to start there. The fourth principle, it's kind of similar with the side relaxed. It's a good example, is keeping your rib cage, especially in side shots, over the pelvis. Right. So it kind of changes a little bit. In front shots, we want it away from we want the rib cage away from the pelvis. Side shots, we want the rib cage over the top of the pelvis, because we want to make sure that we still have that like natural verticality in our, like through the sagittal plane. So if you think about like a side relaxed, if you have that pelvis in that posterior tilt, that's going to make that thoracic spine kind of want to extend a little bit, because the head and shoulders want to maintain that natural verticality, and you have just shifted your center of mass forward, so it wants to fight it and go backward. But we've all seen those NPC online photos of people doing side relaxed, and you got the one guy that's back here like this, and he thinks he's standing straight up, but it's because he pushed his pelvis forward and he forgot about the rib cage. Same thing in a side chest. If you have that pelvis anteriorly tilted and you're extended through the thoracic spine, like, you're just going to have totally washed out abs, right? Even if you're crunching down vacuum, it doesn't matter. You're not going to get the best look out of that shot.
Did you get that sexy S?
The sexy S curve. Yeah. Save that for the women's divisions.
It's more of the Prego belly curve.
Well, it's the, I was an athlete and played sports in high school look. Like, every athlete that comes to me that, like, I can tell, like, swimmers, baseball players, wrestlers, golfers, like, they're always in that extended thoracic position because that's like their ready position. But that is the worst position you could possibly be in for bodybuilding. It's just a hard habit for them to break.
You used to have the old Arnold side chest, like, big rib cage on the side chest, but his hip position was different than what we see.
And he would kick his foot further back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was completely different, but that might have been where some of that came from. It's like side chest, make your chest stick out as much as possible.
Yeah.
But can you also see guys that collapse down too much and try to
shrink
flex
themselves
down on the pec? And so there's a balance to it too, but it still comes down to, like, all the joints from the ground up need to line up to where they're not, like, overly crunched. And you see the guy that's, like, doing a squat.
Well, now you're touching on principle five, which is to not shrink your silhouette.
Okay.
Right? So bodybuilding is, like, if there's one thing that we can learn about bodybuilding today on the stage, it's that the guy who takes up the most space is usually going to get looked at quite a bit, you know? And so we wanted to occupy space on the stage. And when we shrink our silhouette intentionally by crunching down too hard or by just, like, becoming a smaller version of ourselves, or even posing small, right? Like, that's a big deal for people, especially, I say it's mostly men, right? Like, if you were a smaller person growing up and now all of a sudden you're this big bodybuilder, whenever you get on stage, you still act like that small person. And you're like, no, man, like, you're a big dude. Like, you got to get up there and pose big. And I remember something you told me a long time ago, which was, be unapologetically big. And so when you're on that stage, don't just hit the side chest from the side, turn broadside, get really big. Don't crunch down too much. Don't overextend, but, like, you want to make sure that you are your biggest self on the stage. Crunching down kind of distorts that.
And that goes from, like, the moment you step on stage.
That's why you pumped up.
Yeah. We just had Tyler Mannion, like, head judge, IFBB, he just, like, went through the open bodybuilding poses and pose by pose. And that was some of the critiques he gave, like, guys just crunching down on items and, like, losing that silhouette. So, I mean, these head judges are looking at those things, and that's already a pose you could lose. And they go pose by pose to see who's losing shots, and that adds up to your final outcome.
I'm really glad that they're doing that, because it takes a lot of the banter online away, which is really helpful for the sport.
It also, I think, is going to help coaches be objective with where their athletes are at and how they present themselves on stage as well, especially in shots like ab and thigh, where you see guys pull a vacuum and never, like, pull it back down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're taking out half the pose and potentially losing that pose because of it.
Well, an interesting one that Tyler brought up is that he said he wants to see a traditional side try, like the kicking the leg out and the twisting the torso. It's like, that's not what they want to see. And so many guys hit it that way. I would have known, because I transitioned to that.
Right, because it seems like a more aesthetic, professional thing to do, right? Like, you're showing off your versatility by rotating and hitting that quad when that's not what they want to see. Like, we've imposed that.
I know it's not just a tricep pose. we happen to call it a side try, but you still need to, I guess guys shift for one. It's really hard to hold the pose. So doing that twist, you can, it's easier position to hold anytime you're transitioning. But also, like, he was bringing up a good point about make sure you twist and show your taper and all of it, because you want to appear as big as possible. You better, show your full silhouette.
Better show. I always look for the backside delt, just like peeking around the corner.
Okay.
Just getting as wide as you can through that shot.
The picture that comes to mind is that side tricep picture of Andrew, right? Where he's got the leg forward. Yeah. Like, if you want to see what big silhouette looks like, look at that photo.
Yeah.
And I guess on the topic of these side poses, one you see a lot too is gaps and holes.
That's number six.
Yeah.
I know.
No gaps, no holes.
Fill those holes.
That's right.
The holes are meant to be plugged.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, John.
Yeah, especially in the side chest is really the biggest culprit, right? If you can see the back drop in between your arms and your torso when you get your stage shots back, like, you missed the mark. Those forearms need to be glued to your torso. And the best landmark is, like, you can feel on the front side of your torso, you can feel your last rib, that's rib 8, right? And if you do like a little pseudo vacuum or you suck in your stomach just a little bit, you can feel where those forearms need to be placed. You place them right underneath those ribs, and then you just pull up and you won't have any gaps, no holes.
How do you feel about thigh gap? Abolish it.
Yeah,
war against thigh gap.
I used to say thigh gaps are so 2008. Yeah, thigh gaps are another thing too, and that just, it shows a lack of overall leg development, especially in the adductor. And you can kind of get around it if you just position your feet a little bit differently. You know, like, let's just say you're just smaller statured guy with, you know, legs aren't a strong suit. If you can get those feet out to like greater than 45 degrees, maybe get a little thigh rub there. Like, that's going to help you.
So would you give up some of that X frame silhouette to fill in a thigh gap?
I don't know.
Or
maybe sometimes.
Because, you know, some guys like kick a leg out too.
Sure.
So I guess when someone's saying like, yeah, my legs really suck, if I close like the thigh gap, like I look like a, you know, like an A or a Y statue, right?
Upside down triangle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's different for every single person. That's what makes this so cool, is that no one person is the same, and we can have sequences and joint angles that tell us the perfect way to get into a pose. But at the end of the day, like, everyone's body type is totally different, but I try my hardest to make sure that there is no thigh gap. Yeah.
Yeah.
No thigh gaps allowed.
It's just balancing, like, finding the balance between the two.
Yeah.
Like, you might have some gap at a lot of way, all the way down to the knee, but at least you minimize what you can.
And we just look at the whole pose, right? Like, if the pose is a 9 out of 10 with a thigh gap, like, I'll take that. It's an 8 out of 10 without the thigh gap, I'll take the thigh gap.
Then get to your adductor machine in the off season.
That's right.
Noted.
All the good girls.
Yeah. You'll also see this a lot from people not knowing how, because and like front poses, there won't be much of a thigh gap, and then they turn around to the back and they're just not positioning it well for the adductors to stay out, because they're so concentrated on trying to show like a glute striation or a hamstring striation that like the adductors just get sucked up. And so you have this like massive thigh gap. Sometimes it's even just a teaching thing, which is, this is kind of like the big thing for me, when like everything that you kind of preach with the principles and everything is being able to fix problems when they present themselves, like people not being able to get positions from a functional viewpoint, but also learning to translate that thought process of how it can change front to back or however that may be when they're seeing shots. It's like, I have adductors, but like, where are they when I turn around to the rear?
Well, I think what you're talking about too, Luke, is maybe not specifically like an awareness of where are they, but sometimes people just pose too hard.
Yeah.
Right. Like sometimes we think that, and I talked about it a little bit earlier, but the heart, if I squeeze a muscle as hard as I can, it will look better. Right. She's like, eh, no, like rarely is that the case. Maybe like with your abs, like maybe that's one where you really crunch down on those things start to look pretty good. But man, if you're sitting on those glutes and hams as hard as you can be sure that those adductors are going to get sucked to the front if you're in a rear shot.
Yeah, so bad.
Yeah, it's like trying to do a glute bridge. Right? Like it's all going to go anteriorly and your legs are just going to look really small from the back. And so the takeaway there is film yourself or have someone there to give you some objective feedback. And if you need to come off the gas a little bit on that, you know, effort or intensity of contraction, you should do so. Not only is it going to make the pose look better, but it's going to keep you from expending all that energy, right? Like your risk for getting a cramp on stage now declines, your risk for starting to sweat on stage starts to decline, and you're able to have better endurance.
I know we haven't gone through all the principles, but I think there's an important one to pull out of that, of like that carries into your practice, what you're doing off stage. So I feel like it's not translated the same of how people are practicing versus what's getting displayed on stage and executed.
Yeah, that's fair. And most people are so dang nervous on stage anyway that a lot of the stuff that we learn, if it's not practiced for, if it doesn't become automatic, right? Like that's something that I preach a lot is automaticity. And that's why I like people to come to me relatively early so that we can start to cement the fundamentals. So that
how early? When should you start? Like, what do you think?
I think it depends on skill level. But if you're like a brand new novice competitor, I like to see you at the start of your prep. And then I'll put you through a needs analysis. And if we need to be doing this once a week, then we do it once a week. If it needs to be twice a week, then it needs to be twice a week. It really just depends on the person. If you're someone who's maybe like a national level competitor and you've been doing this for a while, 8 weeks, 6 weeks, and then sometimes some of the higher level guys, I can get, you know, one or two sessions with them for one of their preps. And then we do a lot of video feedback as well, just because, you know, like a lot of these guys don't need the push, right? Especially higher level guys, they know what they're doing, but they just want some feedback, you know, a little bit of validation on maybe some of the more advanced techniques that they're doing. And I love doing that just like over a video, being able to put it on Loom, draw lines and, you know, be able to speak in a language that they understand. But usually once a week for a novice competitor, maybe once every other week for a national level competitor.
Because I see posing coaches, they turn their coaching stage into not skill level development, but more like endurance courses, right? I'm just gonna watch you pose for round and round.
Yeah.
Should that be part of it? Is that more the homework side? Maybe what level that should be eventually executed at?
It's part of mine. I do conditioning rounds. How I run a session normally is you get on, little meet and greet, and then we go straight to quarter turns. If those are perfect, we go to mandatories. If those are perfect, we look at 30-second routine, 60-second routine. And then once all of the, and like that takes a long time to build up to. So the first couple sessions might just be nothing but quarter turns, right? Nothing but mandatories. And I have a curriculum. You know, we have a familiarization phase. We have a pose execution phase where I'm just calling shots. And then there's some more advanced stuff. But once we get through all of the requirements for stage day and like we feel confident in that, then I start looking at, all right, what's the endurance like? And I'll set a timer for 3 minutes and I'll call shots or 4 minutes or whatever it is. I'll call shots. I'll have them simulate switching people around, kind of how to, you know, teach them how to improve their endurance and how to rest when they're calling people around. And so we just try to simulate stage conditions, but it's certainly not something that comes early. Like my main priority is making sure that we're hitting poses correctly every single time so that when you get up on stage, you don't have to think.
I think one of my biggest pet peeves is posing when you're just completely gassed and you haven't developed the skill set yet.
Yeah.
Because it's just reinstating and learning poor posing techniques. So a lot of people do posing post-training when you're already extremely fatigued, and your ability in prep for one and when you're under a lot of fatigue to learn more intricate skill levels is very poor. So I think posing, practicing your posing when you're at your like freshest and ability to retain those skills and more frequent over really long sessions when you're first learning. Like an hour long posing session seems ridiculous to me.
I sometimes have a hard time filling 30 minutes.
Because people get gassed, right?
It's like, yeah, there's and that's, I think, a skill that comes along with the coaching aspect is knowing the athlete and knowing when it's when you're getting junk volume, right? Like junk posing.
Yeah.
Like more, sometimes just like contracting a muscle super hard isn't going to yield its best look. Just doing more work over and over again may not be, you know, a good investment.
Well, it's like if you've been through a posing session, there'll be all these cues for all these poses. Like there's a physical component, but a mental side, you can't remember all of it and retain it.
Yeah.
So you need your homework and go work on that, ingrain it, then get the next skills cues that ingrain those and keep repeating that till you master the basics, right?
It's on the coach to understand where the athlete is in the stages of learning. Right, we have three stages of learning: cognitive, associative, and autonomous stages of learning. And knowing where your athlete is in those stages of learning, and then knowing what type of augmented feedback to be able to give to them that's appropriate in those stages of learning is a huge, huge importance in any posing coach. And like that's why I like the term educator, is because I want to be able to teach the posing coaches out there right now who just raise an eyebrow at what I just said. You know what I mean? And they go like, what? The learning stages or what? Like I want to be able to reach those people so that we can have better products on stage. Because I'll tell you, John, Luke, I'm kind of tired of going to shows and seeing the products that are getting put up there, because I know that we can help them. You know, like you should never be not, well, let's see. You should never not want to post your stage photos. You know, we've talked about that. Like you want to be proud of those stage photos. You're going to pay a lot for them. So you want to make sure that your posing's good.
Yeah. I have to say I've had my own posings pics where I'm like, God, you didn't nail it. You know?
Oh, I've never posted a single photo from Universe. It's no way. Like I think about that all the time. Whereas, like I said, it was passable, but I don't want any part of my bodybuilding to be labeled as passable.
I hate to interject, but I want to pull something out that Daniel said real quick, because the cognitive, associative, autonomous like levels of learning is something that is really important to me when I'm writing training programs and bringing people through the progression / regression patterns of wherever they're at. And I kind of want to talk about the mirror, because the mirror is something that's demonized by some, not demonized by another, depending on who you talk to, and kind of where that fits within that learning process. Because, you know, people will use video feedback in order to kind of help them with their posing. But a lot of times they're really hesitant to use the mirror when it's such a crucial thing, especially in early learning phases, to get someone to where they need to be. Because most people's feel versus real is really skewed. And I really just wanted to kind of get your takes on that, because I see the mirror as a integral tool as we're taking someone through cognitive into associative before we're getting into autonomous, to be able to take someone into actually being able to present that on stage where they're not going to have any feedback.
Yeah. So the mirror is feedback, just like anything else, a video, touching somebody, telling them what to do. Like it's feedback. It's labeled under what we call augmented feedback. And if we think about the three stages of learning, cognitive, associative, autonomous, in the beginning levels of learning, cognitive stage, having feedback is super important, because we're really focused on like in session performance. when it comes to the cognitive stages of learning. And then as we progress out of the cognitive stage of learning, retention becomes a little bit more important. That's more in the associative stage. So once like body positioning and understanding what the poses are supposed to feel like once we get to that position, then we can start to remove the mirror and maybe just go straight to the phone. Right. So like maybe like in the associative stage, we can remove the mirror every few sessions, bring it back for a few sessions, kind of, you know, swap it in and out. But by the time you get to the autonomous stage, I think it's in, if we were to label this as like a bodybuilding prep, we can say like cognitive stage is going to be 16 to 10 weeks out, associative stage 10 to 3 weeks out, and then autonomous stage, the last 3 weeks of your prep, maybe last 4 weeks of your prep. By the time you get to those last 3 to 4 weeks of your prep, man, that routine should be nailed. Quarters should be nailed, mandatories, everything, to the point where you don't even need the mirror. Now it's, you can still use it, but I wouldn't use it to be correcting poses, right? You always see the guy in the mirror practicing his side chest, and he's like moving up and down once he gets set into the pose, because he's not really sure if his shoulders are level and stuff like that. Like, yeah, that guy still needs the mirror. He's not in the autonomous stage. So kind of, again, it goes back to the coach. Like, where is this person in the stages of learning, and what do you as the coach need to be doing to advance them? And sometimes the answer to that question is you need to be doing less. Yeah.
What I've even done in those situations is like have the mirror in front of me, just kind of looking through my physique or almost – closing my eyes in some poses, get into it, then look in the mirror. Is that correct? But at the same time, then I'm like, while I'm setting up, paying attention to how things feel.
Yep.
And it's the idea of kind of like we're used to eating our meal and watching Netflix at the same time, and you wait out your food. So like hunger signaling doesn't even matter. You just like put it down and you move about your day, right? So in posing, like you can have it all set right and not paying attention enough to actually the subjective of how you feel in those poses. Like when I know, like for myself, like a most muscular, I have to feel a bit more like forward tension in my left delt because there's an imbalance there. And when I feel that, I'm actually even. But if I set it up without feeling that, it would actually feel even, but it's not. So like you, if you're losing the idea of like the internal feel of poses, it's going to be really harder without the mirror to set some of that up. So that is the integral part of learning along the way.
Yeah. I think the best way to think about it is like a scale, right? If you're a beginner and you've never done any posing before, you are consciously incompetent. And the goal is to get all the way to the point to where you're unconsciously competent. Right. So you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you know, to where you don't even have to think about it. Yeah. And I saw some reel, I don't know, a while ago where the guy said that beginners practice until they can't get it wrong. And professionals practice. Or what? Did I screw it up? I screwed it up. Tell me. Help me, Luke. What is it?
Amateurs practice until they get it right. Professionals practice That's until they the can't one. Get it wrong.
Talk about talked about cognitive processing, not having any.
What are you? I know we sidetracked, but do you want to hit the other principles?
Yeah.
I think we're on.
So we covered no gaps. Number 7, not to cover muscle, right? An easy one to talk about here is again a side relaxed, where like you spend 20 weeks getting shredded glutes and then you cover it with your back
hand. Your hand is that back hand.
Oh man, God. That back hand haunts a lot of people. Same thing too, like a single arm overhead ab and thigh, okay. Right? And you hook that bottom arm into like a most muscular, but if that hand drifts over your abdomen, well then now you're hiding your abdomen. So there's that one. That's a one that people make a mistake of. Number 8, making the primary muscle the star of the show. That's one that I talk a lot about, which is most notable, the mistake gets made in either the front or the rear double bicep, where you can tell like their arms aren't high enough because their bicep peak is below the level of their delt. And it just looks like a really awkward pose. So we want to make sure in a front double bicep that bicep is at the highest point, right? It just, it highlights it, right? You always are going to look up to the highest point. It's not a delt pose, it's a bicep pose. Number nine is a simple one that gets overlooked, and this is, it's wild that, that it happens even in the professional ranks, is just like the bodybuilding courtesy of hiding your thumb, right? That like hiding of the thumb, it's like, it separates the guy who knows what he's doing from the guy that has no clue, right? It's just like a courtesy thing for people to do. It also has like some implications, right? Like you're reducing the size of your hand. When you reduce the size of a body part, the body part adjacent to it looks a little bit bigger, but we're kind of splitting hairs at that point. Really, this is more of just a courtesy. And then the final one is just, and it probably should be higher, but these aren't in any specific order, but breath work, right?
Oh my gosh.
Breathing. Yeah,
oh,
you want
my goodness.
You want to talk about rotate? Like we talked about insufficient rotation. You might not have breathing. A motor control or a mobility issue. You just might have too much air in your gut.
Yep.
You know,
classic belly breathing 101.
Yeah. And so understanding when to breathe in poses, when not to breathe in poses, how to breathe in poses. There's different ways to breathe in all the different poses. We could get into all of those. That's kind of like what the course is for, though, that's coming out. But yeah, there's all kinds of stuff that breathing can really help improve with posing. You know, you see the guys up there sweating and panting and breathing through their gut, and you kind of ask yourself, like, what went wrong? You know, like, was it just neglected, or, you know, did you come out there and pose too hard? Like, what was the deal? But a lot of this stuff comes down to breathing. And then being as calm as you can on stage.
I think some of that too is just complete ignorance. And it goes all the way to the pro level, right? Like every moment you're on stage, you're being watched. And like when I did this last show in Atlanta, like the moment you walk out, you're controlling your abs. And it's almost like squeeze it as small as possible. And you have to learn to breathe through all that. And also, when you might be able to let up just a bit to breathe more, but no one covers that. Like,
no,
I've done posing work with posing coaches. They get you in the right poses, but no one says like, what do you do on the sidelines? Or what do you do when like you're supposed to hold your front relaxed the entire time when they're moving guys around? It's stuff that no one talks about, and you don't give the instruction. So you get out there, you're like, oh no, I thought I could just hold this for that long, and I'm gassed now.
Yeah. And I think there's a lesson to be learned. The guys who compete in men's physique, like they deal with it more than anything. It's incredible to watch those guys stand there in those front shots and just hold those abs for as long as they do. So there's lessons to be learned. Breathing, super important.
Yeah. If you have killer waist control, you could put some guys down next to you that are losing it.
Mm-hmm. Even if they're bigger. Yeah. No problem.
So, Danny, you mentioned a course. Should we announce the course?
Yeah, of course we should. I mean, I've been pretty vocal about it on the internet, but
yeah, some people know what's coming.
It's no big secret, but yeah, the J3U posing course is coming out September 18th. There'll be a pre-launch. Emails are going out right now, but it's going to be all things posing. John was the model for the majority of it, so you'll have a really, really good model to be able to. Give me 1 second. Wow.
Be able to learn from.
Yeah, you'll be able to learn from. I don't know why my voice just got so hoarse. Not used to being on podcasts. But yeah, J3U posing course, September 18th. It's going to be everything you need to know for classic bodybuilding and regular bodybuilding. And then we're going to be having other courses that are going to follow, men's physique, and then also some female courses as well.
Yeah, it'll not just be just the mechanics and the cueing around just hitting the basic poses, but also like we cover like what to do off stage or leading when you're getting moved around, how to pump up backstage. Like what about blazing? Like all the preparation points that need to happen right before you get on stage. Like we do cover those things, even considerations around tanning, the things that you might not ever been taught or heard about. That's the aspects that we try to cover. These final touches you need to know. So it's a extremely in-depth and be a huge value add just to go through it. And if you don't have the money for a posing coach, like this will get you pretty damn far. But then you can level up and get a J3U posing coach potentially. So,
yeah, that's right. Thanks for taking over for me there. Had a little coughing fit. But yeah, the courses I'm really excited about. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it, and it's only going to improve as J3U grows, and just it's going to be really neat. You guys are going to want to be a part of it.
Anything else to add, Luke, that you want to mention?
No, I just for people watching, if like some of the intellectual like conversation around posing, I know for some people it can be a turnoff because it's like their personal presentation of, you know, the work that they've put in and that kind of stuff. Just understand that it's all coming from a place of making you the best athlete that you can possibly be. And we take it to that depth so that you don't have to, and we can make it a way that you can present it on stage. And we just want your hard work to be presented in a way that is, you know, representative of the, not only the, maybe the 20, 22, 24 weeks that you prep, but however many years you've been bodybuilding. And I think that's where I just highly, highly value Daniel's expertise and the way that he voices it in regards to teaching posing, that I just think you'd be so dumb to miss out on this opportunity to get into the course and learn these things, because it's invaluable, and it will save you the headache of regretting that you ruined a 24 week prep on that one day.
Yeah. And just to second that, what Luke said, I mean, I know we can speak at a pretty high level, even on the other J3 materials, right? Like whatever it is, health, PDs, et cetera. And you're like, man, am I going to, cause people ask like, is this going to be over my head? Do I need like a prereq course before I come in J3U? And what we really try to do is find that balance between the technicalities you do need to know, but also giving you the direct, like, I don't even say like layman's terms around it, but you'll easily translate it to what you know what to do, and don't feel like you'll be talked over in any way. And even then, like, you'll be part of the forums where you can ask us questions, you could post up posing photos, and we can actually critique them for you too. So there'll be a ton of support from all of us in J3U to help you, so don't feel like the course will ever be overwhelming. We have it very digestible for you. But yeah, anyway, Daniel,
The forum will be a good resource too. I've already been
absolutely
on there.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. Sorry, I kind of fell apart there at the end, but I don't know if I swallowed a fly or what. But yeah, thank you for having me on. It's a great podcast, and really looking forward to all things posing with J3U.
Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Any comments, questions, leave them below, and we'll talk to you next time.